Welcome, everyone. We're about to begin Be'ez Hashem, Shalom Bayis, Shir number 614 in Rabbi Chaim Morgenstern's Sefer, The Do's and Don'ts of Staying Happily Married. Chapter 2 is the facts and fallacies about love, which we touched upon in the introduction, that the Torah's concept of love is extremely profoundly different than the secular world's image of what love is all about, which by the media is always connected with indecent behaviors and self-gratification, with a very distorted view of love. Like you could say in the same breath, you know, I love my home and I love my car and I love my dog and I love my husband or wife. They put it in the same category often. In reality, that type of love, this expressed that way in the secular world, which is based on a lot of their romance ideas, is no more than a self-love, which is an emotion based on what gives a person pleasure. It's the idea of self-gratification that you give something, but the purpose is to receive it. The famous idea of that if you love the fish, you wouldn't eat it. You would put it in a, you know, you would let it stay in the water and live and thrive. So that's the idea. You know, Tom loves Jane. Tom loves Jane. But what does that really mean? Tom and Jane love themselves. So each one wants to fulfill each other's desires to one another because they want to fulfill their own desire. So in the secular world, in the depth of it, is marriage hinges on that ability or inability to satisfy each other's desires. If ultimately I'll get what I desire, sexually or monetarily or in any of those things, then we'll be quote-unquote happily married, and if not, we won't. But the idea here is to understand the difference between real love that the Torah allows and wants and expresses and versus self-gratification. Again, we said this many, many times, the Torah is not negating healthy taiva. The Torah is not negating healthy sexual pleasure that one gives to one another. There's nothing wrong with me looking forward to it and wanting to experience it. But the idea of primarily focusing on self-gratification is really something that will not last and will actually deteriorate, because true love grows and strengthens with time. Real love strengthens with time after many, many years of marriage and brings enduring happiness that lasts forever. While if the love is centered on taiva primarily, it could be exciting. It could be even a lot of fun for a while, but it's only temporary. And ultimately, you'll be plagued by disillusionment, frustrations. And that's the idea. It's similar to when you were surprised with a birthday party and they gave you your favorite chocolate chip ice cream. You're thrilled about it and friends left the party. You're so excited. So instead of eating supper that night, she eats several bowls of this ice cream. And then next day, she was nauseous and disgusted from it. So this is the idea. People equate happiness with fun, but they don't have much in common. Fun is what you experience during an act, and then afterwards you feel empty. Happiness is what we experience also after the act, very much so. And it's identifiable with a deeper emotion. So many fun activities will help us relax, will help us temporarily forget our problems, laugh, and so on and so forth, but it won't endure, it won't bring happiness, and the things that haunt us will continue to haunt us. You see this from the lives of celebrities. We have rich people, beautiful people, physically beautiful people, constantly access to parties and fancy cars and homes and everything that they want. You know, 250 different girlfriends and boyfriends and so on and so forth. But you read their biographies and you study it, it'll reveal a very deep unhappiness behind that fun. And many have suffered from all these illnesses and difficulties, depression, alcoholism, drug addiction, broken marriages, troubled children, and a profound deep loneliness. And very often after a lot of frustration, many of them even commit suicide. And the behavior of self-gratification always ends in frustration because it stems on desiring what you don't have, what you want more. Like the Chazal say, Mishiyesh Loi Mana, right, to Masayim. If you want 100, you'll want 200. The way the Vilna Gaon explains this in the Igeres Hagra, he says it's compared to a man who wants to quench his thirst by gulping down a glass of salt water, which the more he drinks, the more thirstier he becomes. This constant focus on gratification will lead to chalila, infidelity, all of those type of things that will lead to terrible agmas nefesh subsequently. And this familiarity breeds contempt and overindulgence, and any physical desire leads to frustration and pain. We just get blinded at the time. And eventually they'll have enough of each other, and they'll seek a new source to fulfill their desires, and they'll leave their husbands, they'll leave their wives, because it wasn't based on anything that is tangible and solid. So a marriage based on that type of love is very limited in quality, very limited in duration, and it'll snap. The Rabbeinu Yonah brings down in Shari Tshuva, Chelek Aleph, Simon Lamed Aleph, that one who pursues his taivas, discourages close relationship with friends and loved ones because there'll be conflicting desires between them and the other people. So again, the Torah does not negate you from enjoying physical pleasures in life, including sexual pleasure when one is married, but you have to remain focused on what the tachlis is always. In the secular world, you have this a lot with the infatuation among teenagers, fun, free love, and so on and so forth. And then it disintegrates. Reb Sham Shofal Hirsch, in his Pirush Ambrachus Chavdalid, Parachavdalid, explains that he says the quote like this: how dull and empty everything seems after marriage, and how different from how the two partners had imagined everything before. This sort of love is blind, and each step into the future brings new disillusionment. And very often, in Shana Rishayin especially, and further, a lot of the marriage problems comes from that not having that shift from the self-absorption of what's in it for me to the process of what does Hashem want from me and what's my tachlis. So if the love is purely based on a passion, a physical passion, or even an emotional passion, but without any reason, it holds back negative traits. While you're dating, people are blind to it very often. But once these passions diminish or problems arise, normal problems, then these negative traits come up and surface and the couple can't cope with it. So this is the idea. You see this yisoid from the first shidduch mentioned in the Torah, Eliezer coming from Naram Narayim with Rivka, and then he brought Rivka back. And Yitzchak brought her into his mother's tent, Sarah, and he married her and became his wife. And then, Vayehavel, look at the Pasuk, Bereishis, Perek Chavdalid, Pasuk, Samach, Zion. He married her and then he loved her. And Rav Hirsch, Rav Sham Shofal Hirsch, explains there that although one might expect love to develop into marriage, here the Torah says explicitly the reverse. He married her. You know, he may have felt the Ruach HaKodesh and felt some good qualities, but he married her first. And when they were husband and wife, then he really truly loved her. So one needs to understand that no matter how good in some scenarios the dating went, the clicking went, and you felt that love or affection. And not saying that it's nothing. We talked about it in other shiurim, how this part of it is important to keep with you. But that's not true love. That only happens after you marry and work through things. And that's how it develops. And Unkelus hints to it when Yitzhak brought Rivka into his mother Sarah's tent, observed that her deeds and merits were similar to the deeds and merits of Sarah Imenu. And Rashi quotes about the three nisim that happened there in his mother's tent always, that there was the Anani HaKavod, and the Shechina was hovering over the tent, and there was a bracha on the challah, and the Neiris will lit from Shabbos to Shabbos, and when Sarah died, these miracles stopped, and when Rivka came into the tent, it renewed itself again. So Yitzchak observed Rivka's character, Rivka's Maisim Tovim, to realize that he's the new chain of the Aves through the Imais, And he saw those same miracles return, so he understood that his future wife was a tzaddikus, just like his mother was. And the Shekhinah would once again dwell in his home, and he married her and began to love her for her tzidkus, for her good midos, for her qualities. Based on this, Rav Shav Shafal Hirsch concludes on that pasuk that Jewish marriages are contracted not on the basis of passion, but on strength and reason and judgment. We'll talk about in the upcoming shiur of you need that passion. It's not a nothing. But it's not that it's an impulsive reaction based solely on the emotional feelings, but the emotional feelings is rooted on reason and on a feeling in the neshama, a spiritual connection, to produce that joyous relationship that's full of true achdus. And when you have that true ahava, it will weather every storm. That the ahava covers up all chatoim, which is a quoting Mishlei Perek Yud, Pasuk Yud Beis. The Chazal say in Gemara Sanhedrin that when there's a love between a couple and it's strong, they could sit at the edge of a sword. But what does that mean? That means they could have a minimum amount of physical necessities, but because of their close relationship, they will be together very strongly. And that's the idea. So again, to talk about this, and we'll touch upon it in the next year also, it's not that there's anything wrong with physical urges or sexuality or enjoying that part of it or receiving pleasure, but that can never be an end in and of itself. The tachlis is the chibur, the tachlis is the oneness, the tachlis is the giving and the removal of that selfishness with the purpose of giving. And everything works out that way. And you get what you want, begashmis, also, if the main focus is it. This is the paradox. When you run after physical pleasures, it'll run away from you ultimately. And you'll end up with disillusionment, disappointment, and heartbreak when you run after it. If you don't run after it, adarabba, you sort of make it as a side factor here. And the main purpose being the ruchnius and being the enhancing of it. Similar to Kedusha Levi, talks about it all the time. Chassidus talks about it, that even though in some of the Svarim and in the Musa Svarim, the body and soul are enemies. We mentioned this many, many times, especially from the teachings of Baal Shem Tov. Kedusha Levi brings this down, that ultimately the purpose is not that the body and the soul should always be enemies with one another. There's an comfortable alliance between the two, but the main idea is that they are partners, of course, the soul being primary, the focus, but the body also being part of that Avodas Hashem and using it and elevating it. The physical pleasures are not meant to be crushed. It's meant to be elevated and brought in the right, healthy way. Bracha v'atzlacha.